The last speaker of this session is Dr. Rotary, and we talk about method to initiate an ADLR reaction in an aqueous solution.
Thank you very much. My name is Brian Rotary. The topic is a method to initiate a reaction in aqueous solution. And by the way, I am not a doctor, so I want to correct that. Don't want to presume too much here. Let's get going. Brief history of the protocol that was developed here. I presented a protocol at ICCF 16 in China, it was 7 years ago. A friend and I began with the Fleischmann-Pons protocol in Milton Beaker. Wanted to test the effect of a surfactant, chose one called anionic silica hydride. We didn't realize at the time that that added a soluble silicosylsphingoxane oxane cage that could host lithium ions. In the protocol, we applied concurrent electrical and photonic stimuli. Later, we started testing in a sealed steel reactor because we wanted better instrumentation, quantifiable results, and less loss of material. I got tired of buying heavy water that was boiling away. Yeah. I thought that might get a chuckle. All of our experiments were performed at or near the boiling point, and an observation we made over time was that each time we increased the silica in the system, the reaction improved. So that sets a pattern, they have more silica. Specifically, I want to say that this does not rely on the loading of a palladium lattice. We have used multiple metals for electrodes, including gold, and gold is not for hydride. I think Kirby said on Monday morning that recognized the distinct possibility that palladium might not be essential for the Lehmann reaction. That would appear to be the case in our situation. This is the picture of the reactor. I have some relief valves for safety purposes. There's a gas inlet valve, an atmospheric exhaust valve. I've got that in vogue for a particular reason, and if you notice, there's a green handle. Electrodes with Teflon grommets, there can be two or three, depending on configuration. Thermocouple walls, glass thermocouple walls, again, two or three, depending on the configuration. Photonic stimuli provided by LEDs that are going through ports laterally into the interior. There's a heating element to bring the reactor up to the boiling point and maintain it there. One of the things that advanced our work a lot was we found a superior host for the lithium-ion guest. It's called Octa-TMA-POS. It's made by a company called Hybrid Plastics in Mississippi. They describe it as being a hybrid molecule with an inorganic silicosylsphingoxane at the core, an anionic hydrogen, and a tetramethyl ammonium ion at the corners of the cage. But that was good, that's their description. So in this case, R is the tetramethyl ammonium. It's highly soluble, and what we think are, that they've got good quality. It's a legitimate company, they have quality controls. What we think is happening here is the lithium ion is entering that silicosylsphingoxane cage, and that sets up a condition that facilitates the reaction. More on that later. This was the first experiment we did with this TMA-POS. There are four traces here. There are three blue. The two upper blue are the temperature of the liquid in the reactor. The bottom one is the temperature of the headspace. And here's the pressure transducer. And interestingly, as I was bringing this thing up to the area of operation, which should be at or near the boiling point, we got the reaction, which is, and then the signature, the thermal signature is characteristic of this reaction. So, see the steep vertical jump of about a degree and a half, and concurrently, we got the pressure transducer. So, I believe what's happening here is that's evidence of the phase change. Some of the water is being converted to steam. What's kind of interesting here is that this reaction may be more temperature dependent than time dependent because it occurs pretty much as soon as we get in the area of interest. I can't say that happens all the time because it doesn't. It has happened more than once, but it does not always happen. The significance of the temperature and the pressure transducer responding concurrently, they're different measurement technologies. And finally, we'll also see what appear to be two different modes of the reaction. This steep pulse, and then this sawtooth kind of ran. Different signatures, something else is going on. Okay, find a way to initiate those reactions at will. Frankly, I had a problem. Losing solution in the reactor, and that meant leaks. So I took steps to improve the sealing, and I thought that would make everything better, and it went the opposite direction. Reactions started to take longer to occur, and they tended to be smaller, so that was counterintuitive. I began to suspect the small leaks were initiating the reaction, and I had a very simple, unsophisticated approach. I deliberately drove the temperature above the boiling point, specifically got it up to 112. I took my right hand, reached over that ring valve handle, and cracked it. Moved it very slowly. What I saw was a single bubble of condensate formed at the top of the valve, and it popped. Closed the valve again, and then checked the data board. And here's what you see. The yellow or gold is the pressure, and that's where I cracked the valve, so it drops. This is the temperature of the liquid, and it drops momentarily, and then it rises again. It declines, settles out, and then I tested it a second time. This is the headspace. It doesn't even decline. It goes straight up, rises about a degree centigrade. Then they decline it very well. I said, that's 112 degrees, so the baseline is about 108. When it stabilized, I did it again, cracked the valve a second time. I got a similar reaction, but muted, because there's less pressure relief. So something's happening. This idea of gases expanding, pressure dropping, and temperatures rising is unexpected. Yeah, because it violates Gay-Lussac's law. It simply shouldn't happen. Doesn't happen in the refrigerator, doesn't happen in the air conditioner. It shouldn't happen, but it does. And it is very reliable. I've got a lot of repeatability here. And I did some testing about just releasing pressure away from the boiling point, and it doesn't work. It's the phase change that drives this reaction. I think this is of interest because potentially you can design devices to exploit the anomaly. And a thought, where is McCoogery? Hello, Mike. You and I had a conversation a few years ago, and you articulated what you call McCoogery's principle of disequilibrium. I didn't get a chance to check this with you, but do you recognize that as your principle? Yes?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. So better reactions quicker, faster, be more robust at disequilibrium, that is, the stimuli and other variables are changing with time and remaining static. A phase change is certainly disequilibrium. That may be something that's happening. Certainly contributing to it. So I built a test device using the phenomena, and it was very simple. It's a coarse tube drawn to a venturi with a capillary throat that had an ID of 0.18 millimeters. For those of you who think in English, that's 7/7000ths of an inch. I included two means of dropping the pressure. First, as the fluid flows through the capillary, there's going to be a drop in pressure. As the capillary resistance as it passes through the throat, there'll be a drop in pressure. Getting confusing myself. Secondly, I had some very good conversations with Roger Strim and added an ultrasonic stimulator, a piezoelectric disc, with an acoustic coupling. That generates cavitation bubbles in the fluid. They expand and contract, and when they contract, there's a reduction in pressure. I used one that frequency 1.6 megahertz. And I did that simply because he told me to do it, and it worked, so I was pleased. I placed thermocouples on the exterior, actually three of them, wrapped with Teflon tape for insulation, wrapped with micron wire because they need to heat it to maintain at the boiling point, or slightly above, and then added more insulation just to equalize the temperature. I found something in some experimentation I thought was really helpful. It is not necessary to stimulate the liquid into the throat. When I first started pursuing this idea, I thought I was going to have to do that, apply electrical and photonic stimulation in the throat. That vastly complicates fabrication. If you don't have to do that, just draw the venturi and get the throat itself. if you don't have to treat it in the throat, but you can't instead is treat it with a protocol while it's in the reactor, and that's, I call that prime end. Then I use the reactor as a reservoir, prime fluid, convey it through the through a feed line into the test device. One test device, and here by the way, you see that I'm sure, is simply a quartz tube right around there. You can see the throat. I apologize for the quality of the pictures, but trying to take a picture of glass, you don't get much, so please bear with me here. This is the acoustic coupler, and that's the piezoelectric disc. The cracking occurred right there, slightly upstream of the piezoelectric. There was no previous stress in the quartz and no load. You can check for stress with a polarized light. The glass blower did that, there was none. And also, it did not break until I applied the ultrasonic. It was sound. Then I floated through it, applied the ultrasonic, and all of a sudden it was gone. There was literally dangling. First, I was very frustrated. And a parenthetic remark, I really do prefer non-destructive testing. Much better idea. Second test is obviously got better data. This is another test device. So another quartz Venturi with a capillary throat and locked several heat bursts in this case. Thermocouples are placed on the outside of the throat. There was a first group of pulses over temperature pulses. That was only with the capillary. I did not apply the ultrasonic stimulation until I got here. So that's only the pressure drop, the capillary. This is the compound effect of the capillary and the ultrasound. I'm going to make a comment here. I'm having some of the same problems Jelani is having, and that is, I'm not sure I can trust my thermocouple reads. The problem is they're too persistent. I think they're correct at capturing the initiation of the event, but I opened that valve for, well, not too long, probably less than a minute. And the readings are staying high for almost 2 minutes. I would expect that to come up and go back down. I was doing that because I wanted to show that something's happening with the valve. I would be able to turn it on, turn it off, under control. This I would expect to be a larger gap. Then I opened it a second time, and I think that's that rise there. And it reached the maximum temperature 502 degrees C. Turned it off. A third pulse, and by that time it's probably out of fluid. These other traces, by the way, that's the temperature of the liquid. This is the temperature of the headspace. And as you'd expect, as we're drawing down the fluid level, and it's been replenished by outside air, that temperature's dropping. Something just jumps out here. That thermocouple on the outside of the Venturi starts out of 122 degrees C. The maximum temperature is 502 degrees C. That's a lot of temperature. Don't know that's an awful lot of heat, but it sure is encouraging. At least encourages me. Okay, I've had reproducibility problems with the quartz. I'm not having them in the static case. When I crack a valve, that works very reliably. I would characterize it as being routine. But it's just been hard working in that case. So I wanted a smaller ID at the throat, and I wanted to drive with higher pressures, and bromine quartz was too little, too difficult to work with. So I decided to experiment with ceramics. Two ceramics, I'm experimenting, I'm just not going to use them because they've proven to be inhibiting substances, and that's alumina and zirconia. I've noted that several people are reporting results with zirconia. If it works with your protocol, great, but it apparently does not work with mine, so I can't explain the difference. I began a search for material that enhances the reaction, and I wanted these attributes: a high operating temperature, high strength, high temperature conductivity, and I wanted to be rich in silica. Continuing this pattern, the silica seems to, excuse me, silicon, I shouldn't be saying silica. That's an error. I should say silicon. My apologies for that. I went over to talk to Fran Tanzella and a guy who's Fran's machinist named Bill Bolson. And Bill asked if I had considered silicon carbide. Very easy answer. No, I haven't even heard of silicon carbide. Just happened to meet him before. So he recommended it. He said, yes, I tried and provided samples. Gave me three pieces. I conducted the test with all those pieces in the reactor. We just set up my protocol, dropped in a small piece of silicon carbide just to see what would happen. Here's what happened. Vitamins, thank you. I did not initiate this reaction. This was a case where it just arose spontaneously. It arose 5.4 degrees C in 0.44 seconds. You can read that. The headspace rose 7.2 degrees C at the same time. If you accept the measurements, the power released to the liquid is 31 watts. That's if the thermocouple readings are accurate. That's a lot of power. Power in the headspace is probably greater than that because that's where the phase change would be taking place, and of course, takes more calories to turn the water into steam. If you want to find out how much heat that would take to drive that much phase change, you can torture the ideal gas law, come up with a number, but it's really not relevant. The ideal gas law does not apply at the phase change. You got saturated, the headspace is saturated with steam, it just doesn't work. So I wouldn't report that. There are uncertainties with this experiment. The sample is stored in a toolbox. We'll also just leave the toolbox open the door, pull out the pieces. The composition is uncertain. I'm going to do some testing, see what I can find, some elemental testing, the EDX. And I know people that have additives and they're generally proprietary. So if you call the manufacturer and say, what are you doing with it? They won't tell you. I have tested a pyrophoric silicon carbide. What I was hoping is I could bring some positive results to this group and encourage people to use this substance because it could be useful. It did not repeat the results, so I can't bring the joy. So what this is telling me is that the additives in these silicon carbides are critical, and that means the variable space is vast. I got some testing to do. Okay, what's happening here? As I said, the lithium ion is a guest in the SO6 oxygen cages. I believe it's sharing the SO2 circles with multiple silicon valence electrons, and that they're forming a lithium silicon, a O12 molecule with the same trimethylammonium radicals. So you got 8 silicon atoms, they've got 16 3P electrons. They've each got 2 O's and they're passing through the silicon. So there's an opportunity for some exchange to take place between lithium valence electrons and the silicon nucleus. I suspect it's a handoff that's happening, some nuclear energy attribute. I can't tell you what's happening, what's being handed off, how it's happening. I can report the same thing happens with the SO6 rocks in the ring. And I now suspect that concurrent electrical and photonic stimuli are exciting the silicon lithium molecule in some way that enables the handoff. I can visualize it this way. So the area of interest, I'm having a problem here with the LSAT. Okay, so the summary. I believe we have a method to initiate a Lennard reaction. It's an impulse drop and impulse pressure drop down a phase chain in a solution with a lithium ion guest in a SO6 oxygen. SO6, that word is not easy. SO6 oxygen cage is treated with a protocol, and my apologies if you have a SAC. There are three methods to cause the phase change. You can vent the system, you can dry the liquid through a capillary, and you can use ultrasonic stimulation. And I think you've identified if it's material that may facilitate rather than inhibit a Lennard reaction. That's so far I acknowledge the unknown role of the additives. How am I doing? Am I done?
You're doing perfect for questions. Thank you very much. We have time for a few questions.
Yeah. Just a quick comment. I tried silicon carbide erasing granules in an old cell experiment. And I found that it completely destroyed a thermocouple, type K thermocouple, at about 500 C. It's probably a chemical reaction. I don't know what it was, but if you use silicon carbide for the reactor tube, you need to be aware of that.
Uh, I think where I'm going with this is I would like to fabricate a Venturi of a silicon carbide test and see what it gets. If it's clearly where I'm going here, and that's why I went back to this slide, this Venturi is kind of an embryonic form of a nozzle. And what I would like to do is find a way to build a nozzle that will achieve these 502. Never mind. Simple statement, if I can get water out at 502, or steam out at 502 degrees centigrade, it will solve a whole lot of problems. I think that would be helpful.
So thank you very much again.